Welcome to Around It About Chattanooga, a local production of WUTC 88.1 FM. I'm your host, Michael Edward Miller. My guest today, I'm not sure if you'd consider him a local artist, strictly, but he definitely has roots here. His name is Wayne White.
I was born a blue-collar baby boomer in Chattanooga, Tennessee. I was born a puppet. Later, I became a real boy and made puppets of my own.
Wayne White is a puppeteer, set designer, sculptor, painter, and he has two big exhibitions in town, one at the Hunter Museum, one on the south side called Wayne-O-Rama. He's back in his hometown, the place that influenced his art.
And you might say the tourist traps of Chattanooga was my first idea of an art world. Whether it was like toy soldiers on the tabletop called Confederama, or a trolley up the side of Lookout Mountain called the World's Steepest Incline. They both took landscape and memory. They heightened it, made it more dramatic and sexy, and they charged you for it. Ain't that what the art world does?
He studied art at Middle Tennessee State University, graduated, and moved to New York in 1980. He struggled as a freelancer until his big break came, creating art and characters on a Saturday morning kids show, Pee-wee's Playhouse, starring Pee-wee Herman.
You all know what to do whenever we hear the secret word, right?
Scream! That's right.
For the rest of the day, whenever anybody says the secret word,
scream me aloud!
It was really a parody of a children's show. You know, you could, if you wanted to get all fancy, you could call it postmodernism. You know, it was a very skewed, weird take on the children's culture that we had all grown up with in the 60s and 70s in America. And it was sort of like underground comics had come to television. It was like the theater of the absurd. It was all these kind of avant-garde tendencies in there.
Hey, everybody, gather around to hear a truly groovy, funky sound. Too hip, I don't mean maybe.
I was put in charge of designing and building the puppets. I worked on the set also. And I was a performing puppeteer on the show. I got my SAG card.
That's me, Dirty Dog. Hey, Pee-wee, what do you say? I'm smoking cigarettes nearly every day.
This is Wayne White speaking at a TEDx conference, talking about how he did a lot of the show's floor designs and wallpaper designs. He created and voiced a marionette named Randy.
Never knew how to make a marionette before. Carved his head out of a solid block of pine, weighed about 15 pounds. Every time it lowered down into the scene, it would do this. Why is it doing that? I don't know. All my other marionettes never did that. Never made one in my life. Sometimes you gotta learn on the job and make it up as you go along. In fact, that was the power of the Playhouse. It was all a bunch of young New York artists doing their job for the first time. In fact, that's the real power of the Playhouse. It was a New York art project that just happened to get on national television.
It's fun time! It's fun time!
Connect the dots, la 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 la, connect the dots, la 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 la.
We were all just kids ourselves inside, you know. We were just all grown up goofy kids, and we had a very direct line to our own childhood. Most artists do. And we were indulging that child within us. And it was also, as far as like children's philosophy, a philosophy towards childhood, we were giving kids the permission to be weird. I've been in cities all across the country, and I'm meeting all these 30-somethings that were the Pee-wee generation, and that's the number one thing everybody wants to talk about, what a deep impact that show had. And most of them are artists now because of that show, and that's a mind blower.
Hey, Miss Y, excuse my stare, but you have got the biggest hair.
Oh, thank you, Dirty Dog. Scoop, 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 scoop,
scoop, scoop. Hey, man. Actually, my story was I worked in kids' TV for 25, almost 30 years because of the Playhouse, but I got back into the fine art world 12 years ago through this phenomena of my own called word paintings. I was through an experiment that became a whole body of work, I bought a thrift store painting, which was a cheap reproduction, just a cheap, kitschy landscape, you know, the beautiful mountain stream with the mountains in the background. So I put words, I painted words carefully into this landscape reproduction that was like one step away from the garbage can.
These word paintings he's talking about, they generally look like that, something Goodwill couldn't sell, like cheesy, mass-produced nature scenes. White paints giant block-letter words that float in the scenes as brightly colored and enthusiastic as billboards. In one, he's taken a scene of vaguely Norman Rockwell-looking dogs and painted the letters LSD around them. In another one, he's written, "You're just agreeing with me, so I'll shut up." And in another one, a scene with a pond and trees. Well, he described this one at his TEDx talk.
Heinies and shooters with hotties at Hooters. Now, my mission is to bring humor into fine art. I'm not talking about coy art world funny. I'm talking about real world Richard Pryor funny.
Wayne White has also worked in the music industry. He was the art director for music videos by the Smashing Pumpkins and Peter Gabriel. Other children's TV shows he's worked on include Shining Time Station and Beakman's World. As a behind-the-scenes kind of guy, he rarely got recognition from the general public. That changed in 2012 when director Neil Berkeley created a documentary, Beauty is Embarrassing, about Wayne's life and work, including growing up here.
So my high school teacher, the one time he did try to directly kind of help me, I'd done these Salvador Dali drawings. He showed them to my principal, B.E. Edwards. It's a real old school, southern hard ass. He sits me down and he goes, "Your art teacher gave me some of your drawings you did." And he pulls the surrealist drawings out and he goes, "Those do not look like the drawings of a red-blooded American boy."
It's also a movie about inspiration. You know, it's like, here's this hillbilly kid from Hickson. You know, who would have thought he'd wound up in New York City working with Art Spiegelman and watching him draw The Great Mouse, or working on Pee-wee's Playhouse, or working with Peter Gabriel, working with the Smashing Pumpkins. It's a rags-to-riches story that's always very inspiring to people. It gives them hope that they can do, that they can make the same journey. And it's about perseverance, sticking to your dreams no matter what happens. There's very low points in the movie. It wasn't easy. It was a struggle. And it's a movie that people can relate to, even if you don't know anything about art. If you watch TV in the last 25, 30 years, you can relate to it. Or if you're trying to do something in your life and you're discouraged, I think it cheers you up.
Gentlemen, Wayne White. We're talking Wayne right on White.
This is from a 2012 recording, Wayne White performing with the Shaking Ray Levis, Chattanooga's best-known experimental improvisational musical group. White was playing the banjo, another one of his many talents, and he was promoting the release of his film. He told the audience what the title means.
Beauty is embarrassing. No. What do I mean by that? What do I mean by that, little boy? Well, when we see something beautiful, truly awe-inspiring, we're touched. Raw emotion comes to the surface. We feel vulnerable. That raw emotional state is an embarrassing thing to be in. Most people don't want to be caught with their emotions hanging out like that. Beauty's embarrassing. Number two, beautiful people, supermodels, guys and gals, people that are just lucky enough to be born with a beautiful face. They're assholes. Let's face it. They walk around like they own the planet. They walk around with this sense of entitlement just because they were accidentally born beautiful. And you look at these people and you know what? You're embarrassed to be a human being because of them. You're embarrassed for them. You're embarrassed by their behavior. So in that sense, beauty is embarrassing. It can imbue us with this false sense of superiority when it's really just something that's passing through and we're lucky enough to be a conduit of. But the number three reason for it, and the one that hits closer home to me, artists are people who make beauty. Now that's just the bottom line. That's what we do. We make beauty. But you can't go around saying that. You know, you're at a party, you know, you're sitting around. Hi, my name's Joe. I'm a systems analyst over here for IBM. My name is Wayne, and I make beauty. And that doesn't work. You'll be laughed right out of the party. You'll be laughed right out of society, especially in this culture. That don't fly at all. So even admitting that you pursue and make beauty is an embarrassing thing.
Wayne White lives in Los Angeles now. He's married to Mimi Pond. She's a writer and illustrator, and they have two children. But White has been making frequent trips back to Chattanooga. He has two big exhibitions on display right now. One is at the Hunter Museum of American Art. It's called Thrill After Thrill, a 30-year retrospective of his paintings, puppets, and sculptures. The other exhibit is Wayne-O-Rama on the South Side. It's meant to be a fun house of Chattanooga history for all ages. It was created with support from the Shaking Ray Levi Society and numerous other community partners. It features larger-than-life cardboard puppets of Chief Dragon Canoe, Bessie Smith, Adolph Fox, plus a huge, dreamlike sculpture of Lookout Mountain. White describes this installation as the Smithsonian Museum meets Goonie Golf. I spoke to White recently about Wayne-O-Rama and his exhibit at the Hunter Museum. So you've been coming to Chattanooga off and on for a while now for Wayne-O-Rama and the Hunter exhibit. I mean, with the Hunter exhibit and Wayne-O-Rama, have you ever had this much on display in Chattanooga before?
No, I certainly haven't. This is quite an unusual circumstance for me, and it was a great timing that they both happened at the same time. It's been quite a year for me in Chattanooga.
How did it all kind of come about?
Well, Wayne-O-Rama has been in the works for almost 5 years, planning and gathering ideas, getting the funding in place, very complicated process. But it's something I've always wanted to do. I've been on the road for 8 years, going to different cities, building big art installations based on the local history of each city. And every time I do one, I always think of Chattanooga because it's my hometown, and the history of this city are some of my favorite stories. So I always had my eye on Chattanooga as one of my ultimate art installations. So that was great when we finally got all our plans in place, and the money and the space and everything. We started building it last September, and our mission was to stay open all year, and we'd made it. And now here we are coming up on September of this year, and we'll be closing on September 30th. So that was a long, drawn-out labor of love. And then the Hunter Museum show luckily coincided with this, and that's something that's been on the Hunter Museum's mind for a little while, and I've been inquiring about it, and it just happened to happen at the same time. And the Hunter show is just as special to me as Wayne-O-Rama. It's the biggest show I've ever had, the most art objects ever, and two beautiful big rooms at the Hunter, and it's 30 years of my work. So it's a real milestone for me as an artist to see all that.
I've been to Wayne-O-Rama a couple of times, but I haven't seen the Hunter exhibit in person. What are some of the kind of works that are there?
Well, the Hunter Museum is really special. It's, like I said, it's 30 years. It starts with my beginnings as a professional artist, as a cartoonist and an illustrator, and some early paintings. And then it segs into my years as a set designer, puppeteer in children's TV and music videos in Hollywood. That was a 25-year period, so there's a lot of interesting stuff there, a lot of famous stuff. Pee-wee's Playhouse, Smashing Pumpkins video, Beekman's World. I did a lot of stuff in Hollywood. And then there's yet another segment of my paintings. My word paintings, that's what I've been doing for about 17 years now. I segued away from Hollywood into the fine art world. And so there's lots of paintings and sculptures from my 17 years so far of showing in galleries. And yet there's still more. There's evidence of all these installations I just previously mentioned from my different places I've traveled to, at least 6 or 7 cities. And then there's various things too, like a wall full of drawings that I've done over the years, and a small exhibition of my Wainorama models and the maquettes that I did for that. So it just goes on, and it's quite a show. It's called Thrill After Thrill, and I really mean it.
You're not being ironic.
No. No, I mean, it has been a thrill after thrill. I've been a really lucky guy. I mean, I'm a working-class kid from Hickson, Tennessee, and I took a chance, and I moved to New York, and I worked really hard, and I'm really proud of what I've accomplished, and The Hunter is definitely a shining example of that. It's really my favorite show I've ever had, and I'm really proud of it, and I urge everybody to go check it out. If you never go see art, go see this. It's very entertaining.
What is it like having all this recognition? I mean, did you go through kind of a period maybe when you were in New York or out in L.A. where you felt like, you know, a prophet is not without honor and except in his own home, that sort of thing?
Yeah, there's been lots of ups and downs. It took a long time for me to sort of reconcile my past in a way, because I was, in a way, kind of escaping the South in Chattanooga because I wanted to become an artist and I had to go somewhere else to be that. So it is kind of like the return of the prodigal son. You know, I've come back and I've gone out and I've slayed the dragon or whatever the hero's journey is about. And here I am back again. And it seems right. You know, like I said, it's a real milestone, and it's very satisfying to get the recognition in my hometown, very much.
Have you had a lot of people, and I heard from a few of them at the opening of Wainorama, who said, you know, you've actually been a big influence on me. People who are artists now, young, up and coming, who say, yeah, Wayne White is my style. I'm learning from Wayne White.
Yeah, I get that a lot. What really sort of exposed that sense of influence was the documentary about me that came out 5 years ago called Beauty is Embarrassing. And that's the first time a broad, big audience drew back the curtain and saw that I had worked on all these famous shows and TV commercials and videos that had huge exposure in the culture, but never really gave me credit. You know, I was the artist. Most people don't realize, you know, who the designer is of all these pop cultural things. And that's just the way it is. They usually only the directors and the actors get most of the glory. So that movie really kind of told my story and let people know that I was the guy that made the visuals on that. And the most common reaction I get from people is, you were a huge influence on me and I didn't even know it. You know, I didn't even know who you were. Now I know, you know, now I can place a human being with this influence. And that was the delight and the power of the movie, the fact that it exposed me. You know, it was very dramatic to pull back that curtain and see a human being behind it, especially for Southerners too. It's been an inspiration that a young guy from Chattanooga, you know, could go that far.
I grew up watching Pee Wee's Playhouse and just, oh man, Beekman's World. And I didn't know who he was. I didn't read the credits when I watched shows as a kid.
This is Mari Morton. She's a multimedia artist from Nashville.
But once I found out about him and all the other work that he did, I was just completely enamored. And ever since, I guess, since I saw the documentary, I've just been waiting for the opportunity.
Morton is one of a legion of volunteers who helped build the Wainorama installation on the South Side. Under Wayne White's direction, they took wood, styrofoam, and cardboard and created huge sculptures depicting important people and places from Chattanooga's history.
It's just an absolute dream to get to meet him and work with him. This is what it's about. I know tons of people who finished their degrees in art school, and now they work office jobs, and they don't they don't produce stuff. And so I feel like having this opportunity and and following through with it, it's like beyond my wildest dreams.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to a special Saturday edition of Around and About Chattanooga. Wayne White has two big art exhibits in town right now, Thrill After Thrill at the Hunter Museum and Wayne-O-Rama on the south side. Chattanooga's Shaking Ray Levi Society has been instrumental in creating Wayne-O-Rama. Bob Stagner and the late Dennis Palmer founded the Shaking Rays, and I spoke with Stagner just before Wayne-O-Rama opened on the south side. In the background, artists were scrambling to finish the larger-than-life sculptures of Chattanooga celebrities and putting the finishing touches on the sculpture of Lookout Mountain stretching from floor to ceiling.
Okay. How long have you known Wade White? Did you know him when you were growing up in Chattanooga?
Well, growing up in Brainerd High School, we knew of other students in other areas and other schools that were really, you know, interesting artists and interesting people. So we'd always heard Wayne's name and back and forth. And then when our work started here in Chattanooga at the Shaking Ray Levi Society in 30 years ago, that's the time period Wayne was leaving Chattanooga and going out into the world and doing his work. We were pretty much laying a groundwork and doing a lot of turning of the soil, so to speak, for artists like Wayne to come back. So we started working in 2009, doing artist talks and working on recordings and doing different performances, and had a lot of things planned, and Wayne-O-Rama was one of the big things on the table. It actually started much bigger than the project is now, but this is still pretty big.
This is very big.
Oh, yeah, it's cool, yeah.
How did the idea for Wayne-O-Rama specifically come about?
Well, we were riding together one day, and we've always been, you know, affected and infected by the attractions in our area. We're part of that. Working on this mountain for the past 2.5 months, I can no longer look at the mountain in the same way. I'm totally looking at it in a different way. The light on the mountain this morning was amazing. So we started thinking of all the things that had influenced us here in the town, everything from Goonie Golf, and now we have these great sculpture gardens, everything, and everything in between. And we've always sought mentors like the Reverend Howard Finster. And Finster was truly a visionary. He said, you know, you want to make your own paradise garden. You want to make your own paradise gardens. Go home and make your own. That's what you do. And so we started thinking that it would be a really, really good idea to bring Wayne to Chattanooga to celebrate all those things that had influenced him so much and in turn influenced so many other artists. And that's been really evident in the volunteers who came from every part of the nation, every part of the globe, to be part of this work, and at their own expense and at their own determination and incredible talent that's brought this thing together, as well as a lot of wonderful regional and Chattanooga artists as well.
Wayne White recommends artists go on something of a journey. I asked Bob Stagner of the Shaking Ray Levi's about that.
He recommends artists leave their hometown, go out, go somewhere else and learn, and then come back. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's a pretty healthy thing to do. And one of the things people would ask us year in, year out would be, why don't you go somewhere else? And we did. The thing was, we did. We'd play in New York. We'd play in London. Play in Canada. Play out west. Play in the southwest. Play in the Midwest in really odd situations. And being from the south, we're from another planet. Our food's different. The way we talk, the way we do everything's different. So we would be aliens in other planets. So to go and live in New York, no, I don't want to do that. I lived in Atlanta. I lived in Atlanta. I lived in Nashville for a little bit. Those are great places to be. They have wonderful things to offer people. But East Tennessee has been my home, and I live it, and I enjoy it. I think for some people, yeah, it is a great, it is, yeah, get out, and get your head kicked in a little bit. You know, find out what the word no sounds like in another language. You know, that it's you know, go outside the country and come back into our country and see our flag. You know, go to another country and have somebody yell at you and, you know, 3 inches from your face while you're playing drums, you know. It's great. I recommend it. Yeah, I highly recommend it because it's sobering and it's also, wow, I'm going to learn something. First time we played in New York City.
I want to also point out that the Shaking Ray Levi Society was key to creating Wayne-O-Rama. I worked with Bob Stagner and the late Dennis Palmer to get Wainwright done. So they were very, very important in my coming back to Chattanooga.
Again, here's Wayne White.
I never even thought of myself as a Southerner till I left the South. And then all of a sudden, you know, I'm the Southerner. I'm the guy from the South, you know. So, and I used it. You know, I used it as my identity. And it gave me sort of an objective distance from my past to think about it. And it's a complicated issue. I would say the two main things that I love about the South, that I feel that I'm a Southerner, is the sense of storytelling, a narrative, a story that's always in my art, no matter what I'm doing, whether it's comics or painting or sculpture. It's always based on a story, something human. And then the other Southern element I think that's strong in my personality and my work is a sense of humor, the Southern humor, which is kind of dry and a little, you know, ironic in its own way. Those are two Southern qualities I think come through with me.
The word paintings, a lot of those are pretty funny. How do those come about? How do you get the paintings that you then transform with the words?
The word paintings just kind of came about overnight, practically. I've been working in this as a painter in my studio as a frustrated painter in Los Angeles. I'd been doing that for about 10 years on the side while I was working. My day job was set designing and puppeteering and stuff, but I'd always loved painting. And then the word paintings were just a once in a moment experiment. I had these thrift store paintings laying around that I was going to use the frame on. And I'd started to think about putting words in paintings, and I'd been doing these realistic landscapes. But just on a moment's notice one day, on a whim, I decided to not paint my own landscape, but just use the ready-made landscape reproduction. And I just tried it. You know, it was just a goof in a way. And sure enough, that one moment of experimentation and goofing off turned out to be another real turning point for me. And people saw them and really started to like them. And then the gallery in LA picked me up. And before I knew it, I was showing them all over the world. And I had a new career. I didn't have to work in Hollywood anymore. I became my own boss, the dream of every artist. Those paintings, in a way, sort of saved me from years of anonymity, like working as behind the scenes in Hollywood. Suddenly I was out front. So, and the humor is, like I mentioned earlier, I think the humor is kind of my Southern side coming out, and the humor is my honest approach. I got so tired of being metaphorically serious and trying to do serious things, when really my default position is a sense of humor. So I was glad to put that in there. And I think people in the art world were glad. It's sort of a relief to see somebody trying to approach the truth through humor and not through sort of serious beating people over the head kind of thing.
The word paintings, they remind me a lot of punk rock, just that kind of ethos of, I just want to express something and I want to do it. And I don't care if people think it's great from, you know, a technical point of view. You're talking about how you weren't painting the landscapes anymore. You were using other people's, just kind of taking something simple, but very expressive.
Yeah. Punk rock is an important element in my life. I am from the punk rock generation. You know, I was in college in the late 70s when punk rock hit. I was like 20, 21. So I was right in line with that development in the culture. In my early puppet shows, I used to call them punk rock puppet shows. You know, I couldn't play guitar, so I picked up a puppet instead. You know, that kind of energy, that kind of sense of tearing it all down and rebuilding it. It's that do-it-yourself kind of ethos, you know. That's always been an element of my work. I like the homemade do-it-yourself power and energy of punk, and I like the direct quality of it. That's what the word paintings do. They cut out the middleman of metaphor and symbols and all that stuff, and they're just say what you mean, just plain speaking, which is also a very American quality, you know, shooting from the hip, big words, bigger pronouncements, you know.
I talked to one of your teachers at Wainorama, the one who said, you know, very early on she could see your talent. And so it sounds like art has been something you wanted to do for years and years. But how did you get into set design specifically? That seems like something most people looking at a career wouldn't immediately think about.
Yeah, you know, it's I've had a strange career that way. I've gone places that I didn't intend to go, and I just kind of backed into them in a way. The set design came out from my puppet shows, from those silly punk rock puppet shows I used to do in college and on the streets and whatnot. I loved building the theaters and the sets for the puppets just as much as the puppets. And I had been doing those for a few years, ever since I'd left MTSU up in Murfreesboro. I kept doing them there, and I kept doing them in New York. And that eventually led to my first professional job in Nashville at a PBS station up there. And I did this show called Mrs. Kabobble's Caboose. And that's where I turned all that do-it-yourself, homemade punk fun into a professional thing. And I took that Mrs. Kabobble's Caboose portfolio with me back up to New York City. And I showed it to the people who were getting ready to do Pee-wee's Playhouse, and bang, my life just changed dramatically overnight. And I just kind of follow my gut, you know. And I do think all visual careers are interrelated, you know. Cartooning, set design, puppeteering, painting, sculpture, it all is kind of the same impulse to me. And I like to cross genres and make myself over in different ways. I think it keeps it fresh. When you're a cartoonist and you become a painter, you know, or then a set designer, it's all in there. Everything is in there. It sticks with you, whatever you try.
That's Wayne White. You're listening to Around and About. We'll have more in just a moment.
I see trees of green, red roses too. They're blue for me and you, and I say to myself, what a wonderful world.
You're listening to a special Saturday edition of Around and About Chattanooga. I'm Michael Edward Miller. I'm speaking with Wayne White, an artist who has exhibitions at the Hunter Museum and on Chattanooga's South Side. Shortly before we recorded this conversation, White and his wife Mimi Pond were in town, and she had a book signing.
Yeah, Mimi and I have come to Chattanooga this week. She just had a great book signing last night at Wainorama. My wife, Mimi Pond, is a famous cartoonist. We met in New York City in 1984, and she has been doing amazing work for years and years. She created the Valley Girls craze back in the 80s with her book, The Valley Girls Guide to Life. She was a prominent National Lampoon cartoonist. She worked in all the major magazines and newspapers in New York. She wrote, then she got into showbiz when I did. She started writing scripts for Pee-wee's Playhouse. She worked on designing women. She wrote the first episode of The Simpsons. And again, her cartooning and humor informed all those jobs. Just like me, she crossed over. But she always kept her cartooning alive. And now she has these two amazing graphic novels. The first one came out a couple of years ago. It's called Over Easy. And then the book signing she did last night was for a book called The Customer is Always Wrong. And there are a two-part series about, it's a autobiographical graphic novel look at her life as a waitress in Oakland, California in the late 70s, right before she moved to New York. And so the new book, The Customer's Always Wrong, is being rolled out right now, and she's on a national tour, and Chattanooga was one of our stops, and I was glad to have her there at Wainorama.
At what point did you become involved with Pee-wee's Playhouse? Because I remember seeing a very early incarnation of it, and at the time it wasn't a children's show. It was for adults.
Yeah, the original Pee-wee, Paul Reubens, Pee-wee Herman, he became famous on HBO about 1979. The original show was a stage show at the Roxy Theater in L.A., and it was basically a product of the Groundlings Theater, which is a really famous comedy theater in LA that so many great stars have come out of. And it was a parody of a children's show, and it was adult-oriented, and it was one of the HBO's first comedy specials, and that really put him on the map and made him famous. And then he started making lots of appearances after that on talk shows and stuff. Then his movie Pee-wee's Big Adventure came along, and that really put him in the stratosphere, and that's how he got the gig on CBS to do Pee-wee's Playhouse. And it still was never really a kid show in our eyes. It was still a parody of a kid show, sort of a postmodern irony kind of thing. We certainly made it for ourselves. We certainly weren't thinking of kids. But so it was always for all ages. There was different levels there that adults and could enjoy, and then there was just the pure silliness and joy of it that completely captivated kids too. But it was always made for adults in a way.
The different people that you have at Wainorama, various historical figures from Chattanooga's history, how did you choose the ones to include?
Well, those are the ones I liked. Those are the stories I liked. And I wanted to also emphasize characters that maybe don't get enough attention, that are overlooked in the story of Chattanooga in this area. So I wanted to pay particular attention to Native American Cherokee culture, which isn't talked about as much. I wanted to have people of color there, like Emma Wheeler, who started the first black hospital here in Chattanooga, and explain who Adolph Ox is, who started the Chattanooga Times, then later went on to on the New York Times. And, of course, Ox Highway up Lookout Mountain is named after him, but a lot of people don't realize who he is. So there were stories I loved and stories I thought were overlooked. But like I said, it's mostly what I love to do. And again, I'm always working from my instincts.
How did you get involved with the Shaking Rays? I remember Dennis Palmer was a really great visual artist as well as a musician.
Yeah, I met the Shaking Rays. I met Dennis Palmer and Bob Stagner when my movie came out. When my book came out. That was another turning point for me. In 2009, I had a big, beautiful coffee table book designed by Todd Oldham, and I came to town to promote that and do a book signing over at Winder Binder Books on Fraser Avenue. And that's where I first met Bob and Dennis. And it was kind of a cruel irony because I should have known those guys for years. We were the same age. I went to Hickson. They went to Brainerd. They're the same weirdo as I was. We were all three cut from the same cloth. So luckily I got to meet them at the time, and unluckily I only got to know Dennis for a few years, but they proved to be very important in my life, and it was so refreshing and fun to meet a fellow Chattanoogans of my generation that shared the same sensibility. It was a thrill.
It's weird because Chattanooga does not seem like that big of a town. If you live here for a while, you feel like you know everybody, but you do occasionally run into people who've been there, you know, for years and years, and you're like, wow, we have a lot in common, and I didn't know you existed.
Yeah, I know. It blew my mind that these guys were around, and I had been so busy off in New York City and L.A. that I didn't really understand their role here in art and bringing so many great cultural things to Chattanooga. They were one of the early champions of the Reverend Howard Finster, and they were close friends with him, and they first introduced Howard Finster here in Chattanooga practically. So it really cheered me up and made me feel a lot more affection towards my hometown when I met those guys. And they were sort of my welcome back committee, you know, which has been going on now for 5 years or so, and culminating in these two big shows that I have here in town. And it's just been a wonderful experience. And this is certainly a peak experience for me in Chattanooga, having these two big events happening right now.
So Waynorama is going to be over at the end of September. When is the Hunter one going to be over?
The Hunter show has been extended through the end of December. It was originally going to be over on October 1st, but happily it's going to be there till the end of the year. So I hope everybody can get a chance to go down there and see it. Like I said, it's not your usual art exhibit. It's got something for everybody. If you've never even been to a museum in your life, I guarantee you, you'll love this one.
In Beauty is Embarrassing, there were some scenes where you and your kids were doing art. Are they still involved in it?
Oh, yeah. Both of my kids are brilliant artists. My son, Woodrow White, he's a painter. He lives in Oakland, California, and he's making a living as a painter. You know, he sells paintings, and he is incredible. He's better than I am at that age, definitely. He's really on his way. And my daughter is also a genius artist. She just graduated from Cooper Union in New York City, and she's a painter and a sculptor, and she's making her way as an artist also, freelance, because of the example of their parents. Me and Mimi have always been a freelance. We've never had a regular gig. We've always lived on our wits, and hopefully they learned well from us. They're doing great.
I mean, it's got to be such an interesting place for them to grow up because you, I mean, it seems like your parents were supportive, but they also didn't really know art. So, you know, you didn't grow up in a household where people were doing art all the time.
No, I didn't. And when I grew up in Chattanooga in the 60s and 70s, it was a completely different place than it is now. There definitely wasn't the culture that Chattanooga has now. There was the Hunter Museum, and that was about it. And of course, you'd go there on a field trip every now and then, but there were no galleries. There was no mentors. There were no professional artists that I knew of. My mother was creative. She loved antiques and loved decorating, and she had a really good eye for objects. So she was sort of my first influence as an artist. And they definitely supported my talent. It was always evident, you know. But yeah, it was not, it wasn't conducive to being an artist here when I was a kid and a young man. I had to leave to find my dream.
What's next for you?
That's a good question. Well, there's a lot of stuff. Initially my next job is coming right up. It'll start September 1st. I'm going up to Virginia Beach to the Virginia Museum of Contemporary Art. And I'm going to do another one of my big installations up there. I hate the word installation. I like to call them art fun houses. You know, it's a little more warm and welcoming, but I'm going to do a installation up there based on the famous Civil War ironclad, the Monitor. Anybody knows the Civil War history certainly knows about the Monitor versus the Merrimack. It was the first modern ironclad warships. And I'm going to do an installation called Monitorium, and it's about the crew of the Monitor. It's not about the battles or the war strategies or stuff like that. I'm going to take a real human look at it and make puppets and giant masks based on the crew of the Monitor and bring it down to a human level. Actually, so that's my next big project.
Actually, like revealing who they were as individuals.
Yeah, I want to look at them as individuals and as characters and as personalities. Again, it's the storytelling aspect that I look for. The war strategies and all that has been covered a million times, but how many times you get to take an intimate look at these weirdo personalities that were the crew members and the odd things that happened to them.
Of course, there's a big, big national conversation going on right now about the South's continued honoring of Civil War figures and things like that. What's your take on all that?
Well, I have certainly used the Civil War as a motif and as a theme in my work for years, just because I grew up here in Chattanooga and I loved the story of the Civil War, and it was never quite the political hot topic that it is now in my mind. It was just another romantic tale from the past, but I certainly understand the controversies that are going on now. personally, I think we need to not try to wipe out the past, but try to understand it. You know, and I'm a little disturbed by the people wanting to wipe out the past. I mean, I think instead of like tearing them down, there should be, say, like a plaque that puts them in a new context, and they should be used as a warning or as a negative kind of thing, whatever. But to wipe out the past is kind of like mind control or thought police. It's very kind of a 1984 thing that's a little bit disturbing. I certainly think we should judge the past and know that we at least have made progress, but it's a tricky thing to judge the judge. And I don't know. It's certainly a hot topic for sure. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've definitely heard that, the idea that rather than taking down some of these statues, put up plaques that explain not just who the statue is, but who put that statue up and when and why.
Yes. I think that's a more sane approach. I really think, like I said, the whole idea of trying to suppress something is not good. I think it should be understood and learned from rather than just kind of trying to bury it. Buried things like that tend to come back even worse, I think.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Around and About Chattanooga. I'm Michael Edward Miller, and I'm speaking with artist Wayne White.
You were saying you didn't really think of yourself as a Southerner until you left. What was it about New York or LA that made you realize you were different than people who'd grown up there?
Because I was surrounded by Yankees. No, yeah, I mean, it's literally just I was out of context, you know. I was surrounded by a different culture, which I loved. I love New York culture, and I love the melting pot of it all, and the Italian culture, Jewish culture, Puerto Ricans. It was all great. I loved it. And I wasn't in opposition to it. I was just honest about who I was. And I was glad to be a goodwill ambassador from the South, let people know that, yes, we can be open-minded and intelligent and still be from the South. And I accept you, and I want you to accept me. So in a way, I felt like I was showing the best side of the South.
Are there any particular mediums you haven't really worked in that you'd like to?
I've done a lot. I guess I would like to do maybe more theater stuff, like work with live performances, like with dancers or something like that. More of a live theater is definitely something I'd like to look into more. And I would love to go back to cartooning also, because I think cartooning and comics are a great and way underrated art form. And I would love to get back into that, too, because there's a lot more stories I'd like to tell. And, of course, my wife has always been a big influence on me, and I admire her work, and I would love to try it again.
Do you use computers a lot? It seems like you're much more of a hands-on, real-world kind of guy.
No, I'm definitely old-school, analog, do-it-yourself, pencil and paper kind of guy. Although I'm not opposed to the digital world, I'm not going to be an old fogey about it. I mean, I use the computer from time to time as an illustration tool, and I used to use the computer constantly as an animation tool when I worked on kid shows doing animation. But I definitely am just a pencil and paper guy. It all starts with just a pencil and paper. That's where everything starts. That's my default position, is just drawing and dreaming in a sketchbook.
For somebody who's growing up in Chattanooga right now, who's an adolescent and really wants to make a living as an artist, what would you say to them?
I would say to them, get ready to take a lot of risks and get comfortable with being uncomfortable. Because that is the life of the artist, is risk-taking. And if you're not ready to take a risk, if you want security, then do not go into the arts. But if you believe in yourself and you feel strong enough to weather the storms, then go for it. But remember, it's risk. And everybody is going to tell you not to take those risks, especially the people that you love, because they don't want you to get hurt. They want you to be safe and sound. But being in the arts is not about being safe and sound. It's about getting on that raft and heading out for the new territory. So I would say, you know, if you lack adventure and you're ready to be uncomfortable and take risks, then that's it. Also, persistence. You got to have persistence. It's even more important than talent. Without persistence, without sticking to it, there's nothing.
Are there any particular risks you've taken that you feel like haven't paid off?
Oh, yeah. I've had tons of failure. In fact, there's more failure than success. That's another thing you got to make peace with. It's mostly failure, you know. But when the successes come, they're so sweet and so hard-earned that it's such a rush and such a pleasure to succeed against all the odds that you forget about the failure, and it keeps you moving on. But yeah, a lot of my risks haven't paid off.
It sounds like there's no way you would have had the career you had if you'd stayed in Chattanooga, but today, with the way Chattanooga's changed, do you think it's still necessary for artists to leave?
Well, it depends on what you want to do, you know. If you're satisfied with Chattanooga as an art market, you can make your way here. But I hate to say it, but it's not the big leagues, you know. This is still a farm team, you know. If you really want to test your mettle, if you really want to get good, you still have to go and play in the big leagues, the big cities, New York, L.A., places like that. So I'm not one to judge, though. But that's the bare facts of it.
Is there anything else you want to say? Anything I haven't asked you?
All I can say is I urge all my fellow Chattanoogans to come down to the Hunter Museum and see my 30-year retrospective. It's got something for everybody. And I also urge them all to go see Wainorama before it closes on September 30th. And again, an entertaining, fun time. It's not what you think. It's really great. It's not some stuffy, boring art. I reach out. This is a dirty word lately, populist. Well, I'm definitely a populist in my installations. I want to have a big tent and reach as many people as I can. And I urge everybody to go to see Wainorama and go to the Hunter Museum.
Well, yeah, I mean, one thing I would definitely say about your art is you see it and you smile. You don't, you know, you don't feel bad, or you don't just wonder, what the heck was that supposed to be? It really makes you happy.
Oh, thanks. I'm all about communicating, definitely. A lot of people would debate me on that art isn't communication. It's just some kind of, you know, hermetic, private thing that people have to come to you to understand. Well, I bridge that gap. I come to the people. I communicate. You know, and that's what I'm here to do, you know, to reach out and let people experience the joy of art and let people see that their stories could be art too, to inspire.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
That's Wayne White. More information about his two exhibits is online. Wainorama is at wayne-o-rama.com, and his exhibit at the Hunter Museum of American Art. More information about that is at huntermuseum.org.